This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, welcome to the Occult Disney Podcast, where we look into all the mysteries hidden behind the magic of the mouse. Yet another way to say it. I'm going to see if I can hit a different way each week. This is Matt here. As always, joining me is Thomas, the Paranoid American.
That's right, the Paranoid American. Still paranoid.
What's behind you?
This right here?
Oh, you could say that too. That's one of your comics, is it? No, I was just trying to get you paranoid about what could be on behind you. I mean, that's cool too.
Honestly, I'm in Florida and I'm well protected, so I don't feel as paranoid at home. It's more of a general feeling.
Okay. Well, you get all those wacky news reports that make you feel paranoid about Florida, you know.
I feel like I'm here to just be trial by fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's cool. One note we kind of skipped over. We got too excited about Robin Hood and skipped over the Aristocats. So we'll get to that next time. I understand that did come out before Robin Hood, which is today's flick, but did this destroy your
childhood? I'm okay with that. I'm okay that we skipped it temporarily. We'll go back to it.
Yeah, we'll go back to it. So if anyone needs complete fascist order to the podcast, I guess this is the wrong one then. So how is it? Did you ruin your childhood getting back to this one?
I didn't. And I'm happy to say this is now the crown champion. And I don't see anything knocking this one off the throne, to be honest.
Okay, that's cool. The only thing I could find negative at all was Ken Anderson.
Hey, you watch it. Watch it.
Yeah, Ken Anderson, the animator who did it, wanted to add all the hillbilly stuff because he was like, oh, we enjoyed working on Song of the South so much and all the animators really enjoyed working on it. And he kind of wanted to do that again. And I guess, you know, so they were smart enough to kind of temper him a little bit maybe on that. So,
mm-hmm. But, yeah, I've actually got a note in here that's something like, good job, Disney. You've managed to make sort of a vulture that wasn't an absolute racist, because I think everyone was probably expecting that. But they just replaced basically anyone with color with hillbillies. So I don't know if that's better or worse. I'm sure it's a little bit better, but it's not a lot better.
Yeah. Well, there was something in that early 70s era, I guess, because this is about the same time the Country Bears open up at Disney World and Hee Haw is on the air. So there is this weird love of hillbilly stuff, I guess.
And this is at the tail end of Howdy Doody too, right?
I think it's notably after that, but yeah, you know, maybe if I had been watching Howdy Doody as a kid, I'm now having my own kids. So there could certainly be a connection how, you know,
I still like Westerns today. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a timeless story, I think.
Yeah. I've been saying more and more, I think I like my Westerns black and white. when they're in color, everything's just brown. I don't like that. So might as well just be black and white. I like those ones from the 30s where you can watch them all on YouTube now, and they're never longer than an hour. So that's kind of nice.
It is nice. I've become to appreciate that more and more as we do a lot of these. My eyeball inevitably drifts to how long is this movie going to be? And then I'll see, and okay. But every once in a while you look and you're like, oh my God, there's no way this thing's 2.5 hours.
Hello, Mary Poppins. Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're back to those nice shorter ones here. And I wondered if the musical, I got to look up his name again because George Miller's not right, is it? He's the filmmaker. There we go. The guy that does the theme song for this. Oh, I'll find
it. Yeah, I looked it all up, but I don't actually have all the names written down in my notes.
Yeah, story by, edited by, music by George Bruns. Okay, that's the normal music in it. Voice, cast, production. Oh my, that's just so many things on this article that I did read. But there we go. Oh, Roger Miller. Good. I want to say George Miller, who did, like Mad Max, and I knew that was wrong. So Roger Miller was a notable country guy, and I wondered if part of the overlay was also that, but I guess it's Anderson wanted to have that overlay, and then they just hired the, a king of country music. So...
And I think it's fitting. I mean, there's so many deep connections in this movie that I found. And this one, I think country is so appropriate because even if you look at the very opening scene, they've got this rooster as the troubadour, essentially, and the origins of Robin Hood and the stories that Robin Hood are based on. And this movie in particular wasn't originally based on Robin Hood. It was based on a different story. And then they had to readapt it into Robin Hood. But all of those Robin Hood and that original story were both basically passed down orally through song and ballads. So the fact that they've got this rooster singing, and the fact that everyone's like a country music star, and the whole, the whole cast, they're all country music singers, I think is extremely appropriate because that seems like the closest thing that Disney would have accessed in the 1960s or 70s, as a company. That would relate to sort of what those old, middle-aged troubadours would have been doing.
Yeah, this setting's a little too early, of course, for anything New World, but I was starting to think, oh, debtor's prison. These are the people that would, get shipped off to America.
who were?
I mean, people in debtor's prisons, they'd be like, instead of languishing in prison, it'd be like, oh, you're going to go be an indentured servant for the company in the New World. But that would be a few hundred years after Robin Hood. But
I would just Disney would have liked that, though, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, I was just trying to make the connection and then some of those people would have ended up in Kentucky or something and playing these songs. And yeah, I'm stretching the taffy a little bit, but I'm thinking of the musical connection because the song and I'm actually thinking of a Twilight Zone episode. but yeah,
that happens.
The style of
every
music.
Once in a while, dimensions will clash.
Well, okay, it's worth bringing up because right after this, I'm doing a podcast on an episode of The Twilight Zone, which features a song called Black is the Color of My True Love's Hair, which is, Scottish by way of Appalachia. So
I love that.
That was on my mind. So, the songs, theoretically, some of these people might end up going to America, ending up in the hills and writing bluegrass. So, like the Roosters, descendants.
I mean, I don't disagree with that at all. I think, and there's also like a Narco Corrido equivalent there too, which maybe that originally came from the same kind of story, telling through music, because there's something to it. I mean, Disney's got a nice little niche carved out for themselves for also telling stories through music and making it more memorable to the fact that little kids can sing it and sing along and grow fond of it just because, almost like that MK Ultra Dr. Ewan Cameron psychic driving, that kid singing the same Disney song over and over in the back of the van. It does something to you. So, yeah. And I think that that's kind of a good representation of this movie, a good representation of Disney in general. And Robin Hood, ironically, and the original story, which, I don't have all 100% of the notes, but essentially the main character, the original Disney movie even, was supposed to be after Reynard the Fox. And Reynard the Fox was this like little trickster, kind of like little devilish fox character that represented the poor. And he fought against this wolf called Urine Grimace or Urine Grim. and that wolf was representative of greed. And I think it was supposed to be a nod to sort of like the Catholic monks. So the wolf was this greedy Catholic monk, ironically, which they flip a little bit in the animation. And then Reynard was this trickster, cunning guy that represented the poor as the fox. And then, you know, unfortunately, Germany during the Second World War, they sort of co-opted Reynard and put him in a whole bunch of movies. And I think that combined with it not being as, I guess, memorable of a specific tale, it kind of persuaded, I think, Disney to abandon the original story. And then they went off and made Sword in the Stone instead. And then they came back to it, but it got rewritten as Robin Hood. But they kept the main character of, you know, Robin being the fox based on Reynard. And they also kept the sheriff as the original wolf character.
Yeah, I was going to say that comes through. I saw something about like, oh, maybe that's why they say we had trouble making Reynard into a hero. I was like, well, he's doing the Robin Hood thing.
I saw that and I was thinking, and then I found that, I mean, it wasn't just like one or two movies, you know, the Reich had co-opted that character and put him on books and multiple movies and animations, and it went on for a while. So it wasn't just like they did one thing with him.
Kind of like how you probably wouldn't want to put out the movie World War Z like at the moment.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It would read a little weird. I'm not even sure how it would read weird. It just would. Robin Hood is the property that I guess Disney did not put a complete stamp on. I mean, you think of Pinocchio, there's many versions of Pinocchio, but you're going to think of Disney's Pinocchio first. Same with like Snow White. Robin Hood, the fox comes into mind within 5 seconds, but it has to compete with, you know, Errol Flynn. And unfortunately, Kevin Costner pops up in my head whenever I hear Robin Hood. So there's just so and
Robin Hood Men in Tights, which was one of Dave Chappelle's first entries.
Exactly. So this is one that they didn't. The movie's quite good, but they didn't quite own the property like they did some other long standing tales.
I mean, even honestly, I think the Kevin Costner movie might have taken more ownership over that Robin Hood. But again, this kind of is a nod back to it wasn't originally Robin Hood. It was supposed to be Reynard versus the fox or Reynard versus the wolf.
They did, Nicola, the design, though, like Maid Marian's wearing the exact same thing as the 1939 Robin Hood with Errol Flynn. You know, the fox costume is pretty close to Errol Flynn's costume. So serious echoes of that one, which would have
been. I mean, visually up, absolutely, but I think that there was another twist here, kind of like when we did Jungle Book, right? Disney tells everyone, don't read the original, don't watch any of the originals, like just read my script and read what we want to do with this, and it's going to be called the Jungle Book and it's going to have the characters, but you know, ignore anything you've ever heard about this. So I think there might have been, it feels like it comes across a little bit as, you know, forget everything you know about Robin Hood, here's some of the beats of the story, because it doesn't really go super deep into a lot of the actual Robin Hood background, which had a lot more to do with archery than just one little competition.
Oh yeah, because there's the Russell Crowe one, which is like, what's happening, huh?
That one's probably the most forgettable out of all the ones I've seen.
Yeah, yeah. But that, I mean, he has to go through the Crusades in the first hour of that, is it? Like, you know, they definitely refocus the story on that one, but maybe to the detriment, right? Because I don't know. I guess we all just went like a little swashbuckle with our modern Robin Hoods now.
Well, and honestly, it's such a cool aspect of the Robin Hood story in general, because if you look at it through over time, and especially if you look at it as it itself related to that Reynard story in some very looser ways than what Disney put together. But both of those evolve over time to where, like Robin Hood in particular, it started off mostly about archery and fighting and sort of like prevailing with like the underdog. And then over 300 years or something, as it gets into the age of chivalry, then all of a sudden there's the vixen and the maid, you know, Marian, that you have to save, and that whole romantic aspect, which didn't exist in the first couple hundred years of the story. But because that became the popular narrative of that particular time period, it took those attributes on. So it's going to keep essentially doing that over time. I don't think that Russell Crowe got to put his stamp on that one, but for example, Disney plus Men in Tights plus the Kevin Costner one, that represents just as much of, you know, exploding barrels and just like crazy over the top visuals. That represents it just as much as when they added the romantic aspect. And I think like the 1400s or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is one that at least you can date, you know, because Merlin and King Arthur, no, it's really hard to figure out exactly when that's supposed to be. It's like, you know, multiple centuries or here. Okay, it's right smack in, I forget which crusade, but it, you know, corresponds directly to a time and place, which, you know, at least helps ground it a little bit. So why not turn them all into animals now?
Well, and the whole everyone being an animal fits way more into that original Reynard story.
Yeah, that makes sense, because I'm sitting here thinking, is this like some kind of like weird animal farm thought process? But yeah, I guess it would be more of the this was going to be a Fox movie.
Yeah, so the original cast, which you'll recognize some of the characters, but this is from the original story of Reynard of roughly the 1100s, but it was passed orally, so it's hard to trace back to the exact date or person. But they had Reynard the Fox, they had Isengrim the Wolf, they had a cat, they had the King Noble the Lion, which again is they translated that directly over. They had Bruin the Bear, Grimbert the Badger, they had Baldwin the Ass, a She-Wolf, a Hare, a Cock, a Ram, and an Ape. And this was a fun little note is that the ape in the stories had a son named Monarchy, and there's speculation that might actually be where the English word monkey came from, was the name of the son in this particular story.
Oh, okay. That's wild. Something else we should probably mention, you know, obviously there was thoughts of this in the 40s and the 50s, but we are pretty much, you know, I guess Card Walker is now calling the shots at the company. So we can no longer really ascribe Disney the dude with what's happening in these films.
Correct, at this point. Yeah.
So just to make sure that people don't think we're like, oh yeah, Disney did this. We are now like the company Disney did this. So
yeah, Disney's officially checked out in a few different ways at this point, at least from the movie aspect.
And from the life aspect, yeah. But
well, depending on how much you believe, right?
Oh, okay. Oh, we got the head is giving commands.
You got the head. You got the clones. You got you know, maybe he transferred into AI. Who knows, man?
The clones protect the head. Yeah, they're the guards.
What a great system, though.
That there's something for one of your comic books, a Disney's head surrounded by clone Disney guards. One scene that really stuck out.
I don't want that smoke from Disney.
One scene that really stuck out to me this time is early on with Robin is not saving, but kind of getting the sheriff out of the rabbit's hair. The rabbit's hair. Wow, that's like the worst pun ever, which wasn't intentional. But yeah, I was just thinking, you know, we got Zootopia a few years ago where they make it clear, yeah, the foxes would eat the rabbits, you know?
So I mean, that might happen here because again, he's a trickster, so who knows, you know, how tricky he gets after the movie ends, which does come to an abrupt end. So
yeah, the ending, I was like, what is this over? What happened?
We'll get there.
I know this one had some budget cuts too. Like, this is the one most notorious for reusing animations, and
you know what, I'm fine with every single frame of it. In this particular movie, I think they made the greatest movie they could have with the resources they did. And yeah, like I'm almost like a Robin Hood apologist, just because it didn't unreveal any horrible backstories that ruined it for me. But also, this legitimately is the one that I had on play the most often as a kid. Like, this one probably got worn out, and we probably even had to replace it or make a couple copies of it.
Yeah, I had a daughter, so this got played. I mean, this got played once or twice when she was a kid, but I guess she's still kind of a kid. But when she was a kid, watching lots of Disney movies, she wanted to watch the stupid Tinkerbell movies. No, she wanted to watch some good ones too, but Robin Hood was not one of them. But for this vibe, yeah, she wanted like the Pirate Fairy or something. So,
did you see this one at all when you were younger?
I saw it once or twice. Yeah, This was the first one they put out on video, 1984. They were like, we got our Disney vault. They only come out every 7 years theatrically. And this was the first one where they were like, maybe we should try putting this out for a sale.
That's probably why this was the one that I had the most often, you know, in the VCR.
That's kind of my point, because this was the one you could easily access. So it would have done quite well at the time, you know, because they didn't start putting out their like really good stuff on home media until what, the mid 90s or something, basically.
I mean, to me, this is the good stuff, man. Like this is far better than any of the Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Lion King.
I'm talking the populist stuff, right? Like as far as like how much money does Disney still make off of it, this isn't at the top of the list, right?
Yeah, no, that's a fair
maybe it should point. Be maybe it should be, but it's not.
It should in a perfect world this should be it. Yeah. And I understand how controversial that is because of the reuse and because of some of the shortcuts, but man, like symbolically and just in general, this seems to be the superior movie out of almost any ones that we've seen so far.
It's definitely fun to watch. There isn't a song in here where I'm just like, oh god. Although there was what was a snarky note in there when Marion is singing. Oh yeah, I was just like listening on the train, listening, watching a movie, and you're all grown up inside of me. I'm like, well, that's a little intense for a long lyric there. It's like, does that have an alternate meaning that I'm not aware of? Because all I can work out is a dirty one. Oh, awesome. Oh, I do have the DVD sitting right here. I just ended up watching on the train. And when I was watching the archive.com.org video or whatever, it was one of the tags on it was furry.
I mean, they're not wrong, man. I mean, they even say it right in the opening credits. They say that Maid Marian's a vixen.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that was on the archive.org tag list there.
I'm surprised that she hasn't gotten more popular in the furry community. Maybe we can start making that happen somehow.
Well, you have you been to the conventions? That could be, you know, that could be a
Maid Marian a big hit.
I don't know. I've been to the conventions.
you said it like you have and I haven't.
Well, actually in Japan, you know, there is like, if you go to Disneyland, Tokyo Disneyland, you will have dudes walking around like, you know, full-on Winnie the Pooh suits. That, I mean,
sold. I'm booking my ticket now.
Yeah, I mean, not like the Disney one with the big, like, you can't see mask. Like, you can see their face. It's like a hoodie, right? I remember when I first moved to Japan and I got into the elevator of a department store with a young lady in a full Pikachu suit for no reason. So that was exciting. So, you know, maybe Japan itself is the convention. I don't know.
Now, were they live streaming or was this just to exist in a Pikachu costume?
This was 2004. This was just to exist.
Okay. I like it. I like that a lot, actually.
Yeah, sure. Why not? You say you have a lot of little connections and notes. Should we start diving into those a bit?
I just want to fillet this movie just a little bit more, because sure. I even saw that you had a note in here that was like, this is probably one of the best intros out of any of the Disney movies so far. And that was one of the same notes that I made. Not just that it had this cool, like almost like an 80s sitcom intro or like a 70s sitcom, the way they would like do the close in of everyone's face and then say, you know, the character's name as Robin Hood and then like who voiced the person. So it was like, you know, A as B as C. But man, I love that they actually show you every single character, or at least one of them, almost like the sprite sheets of each one marching by. It's such a cool intro. Like there was no reason to skip any of it. The song is like one of the coolest songs. It's just kind of just a bunch of like folksy, like verbalizations and without any sort of words and whistlings. So I don't know. I love the intro to this movie so much. I can't talk enough about it.
I read it felt like the Dukes of Sherwood was going to get start, right?
The Dukes of Sherwood. Yeah. Like that.
Although I slightly confused myself with my own note, because just last night I had listening as I was going to sleep was the Dukes of Stratosphere CD. So I was like, is that a reference to that? No, it's not. Yeah.
No, but you're syncing up with the universe is what it means, though.
Yeah. So yeah, one of those times that all the.
And then it was 11:11. You looked at your clock and it was exactly 11:11.
Oh, I had a good 11:11 look. Oh, watching this movie on the train, I had an 11:11 really? Spotting. Yeah, yeah. So. There, it all ties in.
And this one too, man, since again, it was the one that I watched the most. This probably was my first introduction to so many deeper conspiratorial topics that took hold that I didn't even realize until taking these notes, rewatching it the other day. So like the snake hypnosis, the even trying to hypnotize the king, that was my first mind control exposure as a kid. And I saw it so many times, but that's kind of how I imagine mind control all works. You just got a soothsayer. They do little spiral eyes at you, and then all of a sudden you're under the spell. So I don't know. That one took a deep hold in me. And I think that represents why I'm so fascinated with mind control topics. It's yeah, probably this movie and Sir Hiss.
The snake is Sir Hiss. There you guys, because I was about to say Kyle again. But yeah, that's our Rasputin here, basically, right? Even to the point where the king kind of seems like he wants to try and kill him a few times.
Rasputin, and I also had like Littlefoot from Game of Thrones in here. A nice little aspect of that too, where he's sort of like the advisor, but you know, he's like a sneaky one.
Yeah, yeah. So
it was again, also it's like, my first exposure to cross-dressing because, you know, Robin and Little John, they end up dressing up as like two voluptuous women, and he puts on like thick makeup and everything. So, I mean, honestly, you might see some like cross-dressing Robin at some of these furry conventions, too. That would be a nice change.
Yeah, but he's no cross-dressing Bugs Bunny.
Isn't that just the rabbit from Space Jam, though?
I guess, well, I'm in the 40s, you know, in the Warner Brother cartoons, they'd always have Bugs Bunny show up to seduce Elmer Fudd, right? That's the one I want to do. So sorry, Disney doesn't get my franchise for that. but yeah, honestly, it doesn't bug me that we basically have half the same designs from the Jungle Book. Because I'm like, well, I liked him in the Jungle Book. Why shouldn't I like him here? It's like seeing the same actor in a different movie, you know, which
that's a great way to look at it.
I mean, if you saw Jack Nicholson in another movie, you can accept that, right? Why not Ka the Snake as Sir Hiss now? That makes sense.
I liked it, man. And then he also, it's the first glimpse I think I got at fortune telling, maybe. I don't know. This one might have been neck and neck with Pee-wee's Playhouse because they had the little genie in the closet or in the little like armoire or whatever. So that, I think that one might have also kind of counted as a fortune teller, but so just so many firsts. To me, these are big firsts, you know what I mean? As a little kid learning about all this stuff through the one single movie.
What's the other disguise we have? Oh yeah, his bird disguise is truly bizarre and interesting. Not quite Muppet Man. Maybe Muppet Man is my convention costume. Do you know Muppet Man?
I don't know Muppet Man. Do you know the Muppet Man? The Muppet Man?
I do. In the Jason Segel Muppet movie, Miss Piggy is now like the editor of Vogue Paris, so they can't just go in her office. It's like, we need a disguise. Let's do Muppet Man, where it's basically they have five Muppets in an overcoat, like trying to walk in, and like, you know, they're completely uncoordinated. It's fantastic. So yeah, look up Muppet Man if you don't know Muppet Man. You sing a song along if you want. That's fine. I was thinking it's an animation, it's whimsical and fun, but I was like, man, if I saw a flying snake in a happy balloon, I would flip out.
That was one of my favorite visuals in this movie too, man. That one just took such a hold on me, where he basically is like chewing gum or something and he blows a little bubble because it's like a pink bubble, and then he uses a little tail and he spins it around like a little propeller, like he's in the like a Jetson mobile almost. It's, I don't know. I love that scene so much. But also I was thinking, man, so we've got these little like observers in the sky, like the king's camera up in the sky. This is almost like a surveillance system that they were hinting at.
I guess they do gloss over family trees and stuff because Marion of Fox is the niece of a lion. How does that work?
Yeah. It works. Don't question it. If you go to one of those conventions, I'm sure they've got a special panel that explains it all.
Lots of illustrations and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, good. Lots of illustrations.
Yeah.
There's also a magical incantation in this movie. But the incantation, it's also like an oath. And it's like the coolest thing ever. It's spider snakes and lizards heads. If I tattletale, I'll die till I'm dead, which is also kind of a really cool way of say like, don't snitch.
It is. I'm like, aren't we all dying till we're dead though? I mean, that's just life, man.
I guess so. I guess it's not as threatening if you look at it that way.
Yeah, when you think about it for a second and give it some nice nihilism, you know, it's like, well, it's just making the oath doesn't really mean much at all. So
yeah, it's just breathing oxygen and letting your insides oxidize, right?
Sounds good, though. Yeah.
And at that same point is when they're basically saying we're going to go and sneak into this garden because they accidentally shoot the arrow through. And I know it's cartoon logic, but I just had to wonder, like, what's the point of any of these gates? Because they can just, like, when Maid Marian's like, oh, come in, they just walk right through the gate. They just slip right through it. And it seems like almost any animal, except for maybe the rhinos in this entire world, could just slip through these gates. But cartoon logic, right? That's why.
Might be able to security back in the day, you know?
Didn't have to worry about it as much, yeah.
Let's see, what else do you have rolling?
The rigged archery contest was probably my first exposure to like government corruption. You know what I mean? Like where they stage the whole thing. The guy like already knows that he's gonna win, but he still gets beat in the end of it. But just imagine is like, I don't know, like a 5 or 6 year old that's like, oh, I understand. Like those guys are in power and they're running the competition so they can make it. Even if you're the good guy, you can lose the comp. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that probably molded me in ways that no one expected.
Yeah. Another thing that came to mind is, at first I was like, you can't tax the church, but he kind of does anyway. The weird setting for the church in this one, because one, he's no longer one of the merry men, right? Friar Tuck is now, he's got his own little parish, which seems to be the haven from the mean sheriff until it's not. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that you might assume that in the story, but they never actually say that it's any kind of a haven. So when the sheriff shows up, you kind of already know exactly what's going to happen. It's kind of a heartbreaking scene too, though, as a kid, where they're like, come and they steal this little mouse's very last coin that she was like hiding under her tiny little bed.
Yeah, I do find the sheriff interesting here because usually we get, you know, very fearsome sheriffs in the 39 movie. You know, he's pretty intense. Robin Hoodman in tights, we get a nice intense sheriff, right?
Here
he's just, you know, kind of goofy. I wrote he's like a proto Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton.
Proto Bill Clinton. Yeah. I mean, yeah. All they're missing is little Red Riding Hood, or a few little Red Riding Hoods.
The thing is, after I made that note pretty early on, so I watched the rest of the movies. Basically, got the right voice
and a little bit of the build.
Yeah, a little bit of the build, yeah. So anyway, that had me kind of like, yeah, giggling a little bit watching this. So a good joke that obviously was not baked into the original, although I guess you already have shady Southern politicians and all that, so it's not
well too... And he goes right to killing somebody. Like that's his first solution to fix a problem is he's just gonna kill somebody. So that's another thing that I think he's got in line with the Clintons.
Yeah. So that, I wonder if that's kind of another thing that would like light a little bit of a fire under people, though, being like, hey, this guy like has the veneer of a nice dude, but he's horrible.
Does he come across nice? Oh, you mean, are you talking about Clinton again now or the sheriff?
Well, the 90s Clinton, 90s Clinton and sheriff, you know, 90s Clinton playing saxophone on TV.
On Animaniacs, of course, man. How could a bad guy ever be on the intro of Animaniacs?
Yeah, this guy just kind of ambles in. Hey, everyone, and then I'll take your money there. Thanks. Oh, it's all right. I'm just collecting my taxes.
Yeah, I mean, but he does say that, you know, if you keep complaining, you're going to preach yourself right into a hangman's noose. And that's exactly what he does.
Oh, yeah. He gets intense in the end, doesn't he? But that's where the veneer is. I guess it's kind
of
like
that's also a point of almost every Robin Hood adaptation I think I've ever seen, too, is where Robin Hood has to go and save the person that's about to get hung. It doesn't play out the exact same way in every single movie, but like. It's kind of like this major plot point towards the very end of the acts.
Right. But I'm just talking as far as the characterization of the sheriff. He's, you know, just like that smiling face that's going to, you know, has a knife behind his back, right?
Yeah, he's just a big goof that's going to kill you.
So which is your favorite character design here, even if it's a reused one?
Honestly, I think I just like the snake the most, as far as the most obviously redesigned ones. But I'm a sucker for all the rabbits. The rabbits I really love, like the voices, everything. I don't know. It's really hard on this one. If I was into the furry world, I could see Robin and Nate Marion. But honestly, I think it's Sir Hiss. I even got a little Sir Hiss, little Funko somewhere behind me. And I don't really collect Funkos, but I just happen to really like him.
I don't remember if it was in the form of Ka or Sir Hiss, but he was. I felt like he was kind of the star of the standout of the Mickey Mouse review, which opened with Disney World. Or was shortly after. Is there in the 70s? They moved it to Tokyo Disney in the early 80s. So you probably didn't see this. And I think it's...
No, I don't know anything about this.
It's now been changed to something else. But you go in, you'd see a little pre-show movie, which had like the most 70s thing ever. It was like playing the Mickey Mouse theme, club theme, like the disco version with kids running up to Disneyland World, whatever it was.
Kids and Incorporated, right?
yeah. Well, except more 70s. But yes, that kind of vibe. And then you go into the main room, which was a theater with something like 40 something animatronics. And it's just Mickey Mouse and all the Disney characters putting on the show. They have
this is Five Nights at Freddy's all over again.
It kind of is. But Ka or Sir Hiss, I think it's in Ka form there. But he plays his, since it's a Mickey Mouse review, a lot of them are playing instruments, and Ka plays his tail as a flute, which is fantastic.
Okay.
Like the animatronic Ka plays his tail as a flute.
I thought you were going to say a synthesizer.
Oh, that'd be cool too. Like a keytar. Yeah. It's got a flute there.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
So I got another note that this was also probably my first exposure to Punch and Judy, which we could probably do an entire episode on, just the symbolism of Punch and Judy, but the two hands that are like hitting each other in the little puppet show.
Yeah, I teach kids that you occasionally have to do that, right? Well, I usually just attack kids with the Cookie Monster, but yeah.
What does that mean?
I have a full-size Cookie Monster puppet, so I'll sometimes take into classes and, you know, just like, what's your favorite food? And if they answer anything other than cookies, he'll get angry at them.
Angry are we talking, man?
I got on my hand. I'm talking to the kid. What's your favorite food? I'm like, it's their second language. They were thinking about it, right? What to say? I'm like, okay, you know, pizza, sushi, cookies, you know, ramen, cookies. So, yeah. So I'm traumatizing kids with the Cookie Monster. But it is funny because some of the worlds just start answering like, if I have the Cookie Monster, they'll be like, my favorite sport is cookie toss.
Yeah.
Like, did
please
I just
don't like, murder me.
Yeah. Don't murder me, Cookie Monster. No, Saturday mornings, I don't take out the Cookie Monster because I think there's a girl or like a 6-year-old girl or two that are actually terrified of him. So I have to leave him in the closet on Saturday mornings.
She refuses to eat cookies anymore.
She's not into my class. They're just like, oh yeah, she gets freaked out when she sees the Cookie Monster around. I don't get that. So, but yeah, all cookie related answers. Your favorite fruit must be breadfruit. That sort of thing. Yeah. So I'm kind of doing my own horrible versions of mind control, I guess.
You have durian out there?
Who?
Durian? Durian fruit?
Oh, yeah. I'll often, like the rule of the comedy rule of thirds when I'm giving kids suggestions, the third one's usually a terrible suggestion. So I use durian a lot. I didn't know about durians until I lived in Japan, actually.
Really? Have you ever had one?
I've had dried durian. That was fine because it was dry and didn't smell like the end of the world.
Yeah. Okay.
the smells that get me regularly is, do you know natto?
I don't know natto. Who's natto?
These are fermented soybeans that Japanese people like to eat for breakfast, put it on rice or whatever. And it's super sticky and it just smells like 5,000 dirty feet.
Go on.
So it's like, please put it on the other side of the table. Cause it's, if you smell it and you're trying to eat it, you're like, no, thank you. Again, it's supposed to be very healthy for you. And then when I'm doing the dishes, I'll just let that one sit. Cause the bowl, just washing it is nasty. It's so sticky and funky and weird. So I don't, natto is not, there's like some foreigners like make it a point of pride. Like I like natto, but I've never been able to cross that bridge. The other one that kind of gets me for smell wise is, dried fish on the table. If someone's left a container open, you get that dried fish smell. Not my favorite. So I don't know. I'm getting,
you're in the wrong place for it though, aren't you? Like isn't that one of like the main snacks?
Yeah, it is. So I have had inago, which is locust with soy and sugar on it.
Oh yeah, I mean you're ready for the New World Order then, man. I mean, me too. I've had barbecue and ranch. I've had Cool Ranch flavored crickets before, which weren't too bad. And I actually fell in love with what they call either lemon ants or honey ants. They were actually so good that I killed them and I wanted more, and not just because I was trying to be funny about it. It was like mind blowing that you chew on these little things. They're almost like lemon flavored Pop Rocks.
Yeah. With the inago is like the taste is fine, but one, it's a bug, and then the legs get stuck in your teeth, and that makes you
unhappy. The same with the crickets, man. Every once in a while you get like a mandible and it's like it's not just a pepper flake, it's like an actual little thing with like feelies on it. I don't know, I get the same thing too. I do like, have you ever had lengua before, like cow tongue?
Yeah, actually that's a big, you can do that good in Japan. We have good cow tongue.
I love it, but every once in a while if I'm eating it and like a little piece falls down, or if it just hits the edge of my tongue just right and I can feel that I'm almost like licking another tongue because you can feel the taste buds, you know what I mean? Every once in a while you get one of those and it makes me shudder a little bit, but it's still okay. Great.
I haven't run across that in Japan. I guess maybe they prepare it differently because
they might prepare. I mean, I'm talking Mexican restaurants and like literally it's just a tongue that gets chopped up into little pieces.
Oh no, this has been prepared and carved up and put
on. Well, this has been prepared, but it's just in a much different way.
Well, let me put it this way. I don't feel like I'm eating a tongue, even though it is a tongue. And this is usually like the Korean barbecue. So you're kind of cooking it yourself anyway. And yeah, I haven't had to feel like the taste bud on my own tongue.
Next time go and just say, just slice me off the layer of the top. Just give me all the taste buds.
No, the most fun was at a company party about 5 years ago or something, where we ate this fried stuff. I don't know, what was that? And our Japanese boss was like, oh, that's whale sperm. Like, oh, it's sperm whale? We estate whale? No, whale sperm, like fried whale sperm. And then one of our coworkers like,
imagine that job.
Yeah, one of our coworkers, How do they get that from the whale?
And they were like,
well, they kill the whale. So
I'm sure he'd be willingly giving that up, but they probably use the rest of the whale, though.
Yeah, they use the rest of the whale. But we were like, I guess that's now the weirdest thing I've eaten. Okay, that or the locust. I'm not quite sure which I should claim.
I mean, if you think about it, that might actually be more sustainable as a long-term food source, as long as you don't kill the whale, right? Yeah. Because it has to be significant. It has to be filled with protein, and it feels like it would be absolutely renewable, and nobody gets hurt in the process.
What's the opposite? What's your job? Milk whales.
But we could all do it, right? Like,
if
we all did it, then it wouldn't be weird for anybody.
Especially, we'll all do it together. It won't be weird at all.
Yeah,
that's right. Sure, it's just a nice just normal make Saturday. Eye contact.
We'll form a big circle. I mean, you actually need like a full circle of people in order to pull it off. No,
no, don't pull it off. This is supposed to be
that's right. Sustainable. Hey, it just needs to be renewable.
Okay, I guess we should probably get back to this movie. I did keep just writing Baloo and Ka in my notes, I guess, but yeah. I like Baloo and Ka, though. I'm happy to see them in this movie. That's why I'm doing that. So it's out of charm.
Yeah, I have no ill will towards any aspect of this movie, which is absolutely rare for me. And I understand all of it. And it ends on a good note. We can talk about the ending kind of being abrupt, where the king just kind of shows up, right? Or the king doesn't even... I mean, he shows up at the very end, but the narrator just kind of pops in and it's like, oh, and then after all this happens, you know, the king comes in and he just sorted everything out and the end, everybody. And then it just kind of fades to the title and then the movie ends. But I kind of appreciated that in so many ways because my first instinct was like, really, you're just going to end right now? And I was like, actually, I think this is like just around the right amount, because if they wanted to go into any other little subplots, we would have been there for another 20, 30, 40 minutes, right?
We would have been a Ridley Scott Robin Hood movie starring Russell Crowe.
Well, and this is actually one of the things that I love about animation, is because unlike a movie where there's like an 8-hour director's cut, I mean, it would be absolutely insane for Disney to produce an 8-hour movie and then trim it down to an hour and a half, right? Like it would be, people would literally be dying over the course of that animation process.
Well, now
or
we
any
make,
animation process.
Now we make 8-hour movies now. We just call it prestige TV, right? I mean, I'm basically I'm in the middle of an 8-hour Star Trek movie right now, yeah. So the king shows up and resolves everything. I mean, in a fairy tale, I guess that makes sense, but yeah, you're like, I don't know. What were my notes here? I had Wayne's World fake out ending first. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's a fire, but nothing really resolved. Yeah. I guess I wasn't willing to accept that the king showing up resolved anything. I was doing a podcast on, I don't remember what it was, but it was myself and the other two guys on the podcast were British. And it was right after the queen died. And one of them was like, oh, wait a minute. If the king leaves the country now, we got the nonce in charge. Nonce being child tiddler. And then British slang, English. But yeah, now I keep having in my mind, like I kept thinking, watching this guy, I mean, I don't think he's doing that, but I was like, he's a nonce in charge. He's the half-witted brother that's...
It means different things in different contexts.
Right, exactly. So in that, I mean, I don't know if the King of England showing up is a good thing either, but in this movie I guess it is, so whatever.
In a Disney way it is, but yeah, I was thinking, you know, he showed up, he attacked your blood brother, he set fire to your castle, I doubt, and stole all the gold out of the castle, which probably wasn't exactly his, and honestly it's not like the, you know, Prince John PJ would have been any better or worse than like a legitimate king that was still hoarding all of this gold and had a golden throne and had, you know, all of these nice clothes. It's, you know, he just happened to be acting a little bit more out of line, but the king, it seems like he would have been guilty of all the same things that Robin Hood would have been against at the same time. Like, he still would have been stealing from the kingdom, right? Does he just stop stealing at this point? What does he do now? You know?
Also, I guess I don't spell it out in this, but didn't he just come back from the Crusades doing God knows what? Or God shouldn't know what. Yeah.
Getting down with those Templar.
Right, right. And just, you know, setting villages on fire, whatever. I don't even, yeah, the Crusades, like, oh, what horrible things can happen there. And then send some kids, see what happens.
And he also makes a little bit of a joke where he says, oh, I've got an outlaw for an in-law. Ha ha ha. But I was thinking, like, yeah, but you've also got like an inbred inmate as your blood brother. So, you know, who's really the one at the shit end of that stick? No.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we do need to call out here. Scrooge McDuck would have been happy with that gold. He just swims around in it. He's fine. You know, I guess after I was just going on Illuminati DuckTale adventures or whatever it is.
He gets a pass, though, because he's got a catchier theme song.
Well, but this is a pretty good theme song.
It's a good theme song, but it's not holding any sway over the earworm of DuckTales. There's no way
that one just never leaves your mind ever. That's a good point.
I mean, this one has Whistle Stop, which is one of my favorite songs ever, just in any context. Whistle Stop, which I think might even be part of that very first intro, unless they're two different but similar songs.
Oh no, it's at the start, or at least the theme is. He might sing different words, but
yeah, the Whistle Stop song is always gonna be one of my absolute favorites.
Right on. Let's see. Oh, sorry. Oh, praise the Lord, tax rebates. I'm buying a flat screen. That's how I kind of felt when everyone gets out of their debtor's prison. Get some money. I mean, I buy stupid stuff, so what can I say? I can't, yeah. When the company's like, here's the bonus that you didn't expect or something, like, oh, that probably means I'm buying a guitar. So I get it. Do you have any other rabbit holes in your notes you want to dive down?
I mean, there's also some interesting relationships with Robin Hood and the Green Man, which was this revival of like Celtic, or the Green Knight rather. Sorry. I don't know if you've seen that movie that came out recently, Green Knight.
I've been told many times to go check it out, but I have not yet.
It's a thing. It's a whole thing that you'd have to sit down and like watch and pay attention to. But that might be one of the original stories of where Robin Hood came from too, which makes Robin Hood almost like this Celtic, like a naturalist folklore story. Because again, whenever he retreats, or his safe space is going off into the woods. And that's a recurring theme in every Robin Hood movie that I think we've probably ever seen, where that's his refuge. And that's where he harnesses his power. And then at the same time, the castle represents like human civilization and a separation from nature. So this whole dichotomy of the bad versus the good, or the poor versus the rich, it's also sort of like the naturalists versus like the civilized world, and showing how he wants to take the benefits of the civilized world and like bring them back into nature. And it's just like an interesting extra archetype that sits on top of this whole kind of thing, which also repeats itself in a lot of these Disney movies that we've watched a few times. Like Fox and the Hound was another one, and a few others.
Sword in the Stone has that, you know, Merlin's out in the boonies. Jungle Book, the village is civilization and the jungle's the jungle. Yep. Right. So it is interesting. Like, yeah, in the 60s and up to, this is 72 or three, I think. Yeah, that it seems to be kind of like a leaf motif or whatever, you know. It's kind of, I'm sitting here thinking Pinocchio is more of a series of vignettes. Dumbo is more like vignettes. Yeah. We kept talking about how the earlier ones were kind of like, oh, it's like, here's five shorts you could carve out of this movie, right? Whereas now it seems to be using this formula a little more. But yeah, it's not an obvious formula, I guess. So it's probably functional, you know, because you can completely...
This one has some very strong acts. I think they all do, though. So far, that all the movies have had some pretty... Except for Bedsticks and Boar Knobs, whatever the hell.
Yeah. But that's not fully animated, so I don't know if that really... fits in the milieu. I mean, we obviously talked about, so it fits that way, but yeah.
And then another interesting one too is that the rooster, I don't even know if they mention his name, but the rooster's name is Allan a Dale, who was in the original story one of the merry men in Robin Hood's little gang. That's the troubadour guy. So I thought that was just interesting that that was a way that they sort of incorporated this. And the act, I mean, the original symbolism of the rooster is pretty explicit. It's usually to mark the beginning of a new chapter or a new story. And here he is introducing this new story. And he also comes in and wraps it up, which is obvious as a narrator, but it's just so appropriate that they use that symbolism of the rooster to do that.
I guess these are a Greek chorus, more or less. It is interesting that it's just Robin Hood and Lil Jon or whatever. There are no merry animals to speak of, which I'm like, because I think at some point they were going to even title it Merry Men or something. But I wonder if it was something about, you know, just animation budget. We don't want to have to animate like 10 people around Robin Hood all the time.
Maybe, but I also think that for as many characters as this movie actually has, they all have really interesting, unique backstories and personalities and characters. Like if you go to Bambi, right? You had Thumper and you had Bambi and you had the skunk, but then there was also like a whole bunch of other rabbits that were just like faded into the background. This movie only has maybe three or four characters that fade into the background. You've got the rhinos, which there's just kind of like one that they multiply in the cell animation process, right? And honestly, the rhino was also one of the Reich favorite characters, which is maybe why they made him like the super bad guy. But the rhinos is one that doesn't really have much beyond that. And then when they go to the archery competition, they're competing against three other people. There's like a pig, there's the turtle's dad, and then there's like some other nondescript character that don't have any lines and they don't necessarily have a lot of detail to them. But other than that, every other character, it stands out and they're absolutely unique and they've got like interesting voices and everything. And I don't think you would have done that by adding a few extra merry men. At a certain point, you know, the seams start to burst a little bit, not just budget wise, but just, you know, too much going on the screen, too many people that need exposition.
Well, it seemed a lot of them, like you said, with the rooster and with Friar Tuck, they just moved them into town. They just don't gallivant around with Robin, you know.
Which sense. It made sense that way, because then you don't have to explain like their relationship to each other and all these interconnected and explain the whole issue of merry men. I don't know. I love it. I don't have anything bad. Usually I'd like to find little chinks in the armor here, but this one I can't.
I have to bring up the elephants. It's not so much a chink in the armor. I mean, I'm usually just amusing observations, but I was thinking, man, they got like four elephant trumpeters on like that tower. I'm like, that tower is going to crumble. Can't put four elephants on a tower.
Except in cartoons, right? Again, that's the fun part about the cartoon.
That's the logic. Of course, that's the fun.
Which
about
is the same in comic logic.
Yeah, I was just saying they're like, how do you build that? Yeah. How do you get them up there? That's impossible. Okay.
That's one of those Carthaginian tricks you got to know about.
Yeah. I guess we'll get to wrapping up today, but did you have any other final thoughts you want to throw on it other than this movie's awesome? It's definitely your recurring theme. I certainly have no complaints.
I love the movie, but yeah, I mean, it just blew my mind. My first intro to mind control, cross-dressing, government corruption, fortune-telling, incantations, not snitching on your friends, blood oaths, just all of that. I mean, we're talking about a Disney movie. Usually this is where one of those Disney conspiracy podcasts would start blowing up. You know, it's got mind control and it literally has all of those things in it. And they're not even like subtle, right? Like the snake is actually mind controlling the king within the first like 5 to 10 minutes of the movie. And it's such a normal occurrence that the king's like, no, like not now, right? And the snake's like, oh, I was trying to help. Where it's like, oh, like the king just regularly gets mind controlled by a snake. That's kind of a cool concept. I don't know. I don't know. Every single aspect of it, because it's not all veiled. So then I don't know. And on top of that, the fact that there was no, as you would call, nonces that were involved in the direct production of the movie definitely helped out a lot too.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't want that to become like a new standard or anything, because then I can't watch any Roman Polanski movies or a whole bunch of other ones. But it was just, it's weird because people make those claims about Disney movies or like the stories they're based on so often, and you pass it off, right? You write it off like, oh, you're you're just being like that. But then you look into the backstory and it's like, oh, I wish I didn't know that.
Yeah, for me, the most disturbing iteration, I guess, would be I don't even like Elmo, but I guess I like, you know, it was like when Kevin Clash took his hit for doing horrible stuff after 30 years of Elmo. And it was, that's pretty weird.
I mean, yeah.
He's a puppets on Labyrinth, you know, it's like, oh, I don't like that.
Labyrinth, I mean, I like Labyrinth. Has some, dude, Labyrinth has some sexual undertones to it.
Oh, yeah. We just, I just did a podcast on that a few weeks ago. And, one of my co-hosts was saying when he was maybe like in his early 20s, he watched it with a girlfriend and she was like, yo, we call all penises David. So we can say there's David's David.
It's dude, the movie is so weird too, because even after you get over the fact that he's seducing this clearly underage girl, he also is like seducing a clearly underage baby. And like, in any other context, right, a guy that is so obsessed with this little baby, I don't know, it's such a weird freaking movie, man.
Well, that's why I didn't get into David Bowie until the late 90s. I was terrified of him for years.
You weren't wrong, man. He had a huge bulge in that movie too. They weren't like trying to hide
David's
anything.
David, yeah
power of the babe.
I think I kind of worked out what my track is on this movie. I'm sure I saw it a few times as a kid, and then in the late 80s I taped the Errol Flynn one off of TV, and you know, like in a 9-10 year old brain, it sort of like supplants, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like you kind of forget the old one existed. I had the same problem with Buck Rogers and Logan's Run, where I was like, I like Logan's Run, but I feel like there's something missing, and then that would have been Buck Rogers. So maybe that's how it was. Like, I like this Errol Flynn movie, but something seems slightly off, and it's probably like older memories of this movie, right?
Probably.
Yeah. So it is interesting how like in developing, you know, you sometimes cross wires like that a little bit and figure it out many years later, like, oh wow, those are two completely separate things that I kind of conflated as one thing in my head.
And I do have another final parting thought on this one, and maybe I'm wrong, right, but I didn't see any major sequels that ever came out of this movie, especially considering how abruptly it ended. Do you know, have there been like Robin Hood 2, 3, 4, and 5 and everything?
I don't believe so. I mean, they could have see, in the 80s they had the Gummy Bears, another earworm song, right, which that to me seemed like something about this movie didn't sit right with Disney, and I don't know what it is. Maybe, you know, they burn out on this, on their hillbilly phase in the early 70s and just didn't want to go back there.
That could be it, honestly. But man, if any Disney movie deserved a sequel, this is the one. Not all of the ones that have gotten all the weird. See, no one needed 102 Dalmatians. If anything, we needed the actual sequel that was written, where dogs fly out into outer space and they talk about nuclear war. But we didn't get that one, right? We got a whole bunch of other weird sequels and direct to DVD type movies. But I don't know, this one deserved one.
Yeah, one of my friends listened, and he said the starlight barking actually made him angry.
Really? That's so much cooler than anything I ever would have imagined out of a sequel. And I really wish that Disney would have made that version, but I understand why they didn't.
The fun version of angry, you know, not just angry, just like, you know, oh my God, why? Yeah. that version of angry. You know, so it is the fun version of angry, at least. But I know I have a photo with one of the characters from this from Disneyland, so I at least have a few walk arounds of people from this movie, I think. But it's been quite a while since that was 15 years ago. So yeah, it does seem like a weirdly ignored property. Again, this is the first film they felt they could put out on home video, because they're like, yeah, let's put that one out, you know. We still got the good ones in the vault. I'm not talking about your taste there. I'm talking about the attitude at the Disney company.
How dare you, sir.
Yeah. So I don't know.
And I know this is sacrilege, and I've mentioned this a few times before, but usually when I watch these movies, I'll watch them at like 2x or something, if I really have to. And this one I didn't want to, right? I played it at 1x and I watched it at 1x, but then I wanted to go back and take a few extra notes, so I played it at 2x, and let me tell you, to the boos of many, I'm sure, the movie might even be better at like 1.7 to 2x. The songs are better. Like the cadence of everything is better. Every once in a while, if there's a character that talks particularly fast in a scene, you know, you can tell that it's a little bit faster than it should be. But other than that, I swear my brain switched over to a point where I accidentally walked away and came back and it started at 1x again. And it felt like it was playing in slow-mo. So I put it back on 2x and it was like, man, this is great. I don't know. If there's not a metric out there for movies that are good to watch at 2x, maybe this would be a good example of where to start.
I think, yeah, a lot of animation can kind of work that way, I think. Especially older animation where you can't...
Usually where it breaks down to the songs, though. The songs tend to not work as well at 2x. This one in particular, they worked great.
Now they're hyper. I was going to joke, oh, I guess they should make a live action version of this. But in April 2020, it was reported that CG was developing a live action remake of Robin Hood. Although that was 3 years ago. That was 3 years ago.
I hope that never happens.
Same here. I was going to joke about it because there's so many live action versions.
But that taps into the conspiracy, right? That they just make an inferior, crappy remake just to boost the numbers of the original and get people to fall in love with the original again, and maybe then we get the second sequel that's animated that comes out. So I've got faith that there might be some bigger Illuminati style Disney plan behind all this.
I don't even think that's a conspiracy, man. I think that's just a business plan.
I mean, potato tomato. No.
It's like I see the live action current ones, it's kind of like buying bonds, right? They're going to pay off later when the
war bonds. Yeah.
Yeah. When the older movie starts make some more bank because people are reminded of it, you know? So that, I think that's the main purpose of these live action ones is, yeah, basically like buying bonds. I guess it's a creative way to buy bonds. I just wish they had managed to make some better movies out of it.
But now, I could do like a hip hop Robin Hood if they wanted to remake it and throw like Drake in there or something. I think I could actually stomach most of it. You like the Elvis remake, right?
Yeah, you could do like the Saved by the Bell Snow White rap musical, if you ever saw that. That's one of the most
I haven't. Now I need to know.
That's one of the cringiest things ever. It's well, one black person, at least a turtle, but the rest of, well, and actually Mark Park Gosselaar is not technically a white dude, but anyway, it's just the whitest thing you've ever seen. They got the every song in the musical is like, they only have this one beat and it's just like, oh, you're singing, like, please don't do this. Don't do this. So
top that.
Right. yeah, it's I'll see if I can find a clip for you for that. That's one of the cringiest moments of film you'll ever see. Well, a video, they didn't shoot that on film. That'd be stupid. They shot the new one on film, I think. But yeah, that's one of my weird obsessions, because I get home from school and watch it. So I see there's a mind control. Some of my memories, I can't tell if they were Saved by the Bell or high school now. So
I mean, they also had little hypnotic swirls in the intro to that show, so you might not be completely off base here.
Yeah. They early 90s design like hypnotizes you. Yeah. It's when they put everything on the walls. I heard recently about someone in the late 90s at a mall in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, just, you know, locked the doors to the Burger King and left in the mid 90s. And, you know, it was like a time capsule. Someone finally opened that door not long ago and found just like a perfect condition, like 80s Burger King with all the insane, like, you know, stylings on the wall and stuff.
That might just be the cover story for an actual portal into the past.
Oh, yeah. That'd be cool too. I don't think they're serving hamburgers anymore though. So you could not get a Whopper, you know, because the place was closed. No, in a proper Twilight Zone, of course, you'd get your Twilight Zone Whopper. So,
well, they definitely don't want anyone to see how big the Whoppers used to be compared to today. So they'd rather that just not exist.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I guess we'll put the kibosh on this one today. Of course, this is the Occult Disney Podcast. We are on Twitter. We're on Facebook. I just forgot to check the Facebook page. Okay. But we are on Facebook as a Call of Disney. I checked the Twitter. So yeah, if anyone wants to say a howdy, do it there, I guess. On Patreon, we do Podcastius, where you can support this and other podcasts, including the one I do about the Twilight Zone, Time Enough Podcast, And what else do I do? Oh, I was about to say Caught Disney, but that's this one. No, we're starting Films or Filth, where we're going to go over the top 100 and bottom 100 films as rated on IMDb and decide if they are, if it's a film or if it's filth. So, I mean, I guess we kind of stacked the deck, but hey, we're going to find some films that are supposed to be terrible we love and probably vice versa. So that's going to be part of the charm of it. What's going on in your world? It is actually, this is tomorrow, so you can be very up to date.
Well, that's good because I actually somehow found a domain. You can go to nasacomic.com and sign up to get notified for when this this NASA book comes out. It stands for Never a Straight Answer, and it's about Stanley Kubrick directing the moon landings. It's a full color, more than, I think it's like a 48 page book here. And it's got all kinds of cool backstories about Stanley Kubrick and moons. And it's got little like tidbits about Eyes Wide Shut and Clockwork Orange and just all kinds of, if you love Stanley Kubrick and if you like anything about the moon landing theories, this is absolutely a book that you would love. So you can go to nasacomic.com. This is basically a love letter to conspiracy theorists and Stanley Kubrick fans. And then as soon as I get, I think around like 100 or so people that have clicked on notify me when this campaign launches, then I launch the campaign. So as soon as I get enough interest, this one will be released and you can get a copy of it. All right. At nasacomic.com.
Groovy. Okay, I guess I'm going to go practice my archery. I did some archery as a kid. I wasn't very good at it, though.
I did the most Florida thing ever. I've done crossbow fishing.
That's what I'll say. I haven't done.
And I actually caught a fish.
Oh, okay. That sounds weirdly satisfying. Maybe
it felt like the most Florida thing that I've done in a very, very long time. Cause it was raining and we're out on this like crappy little boat. Everyone's got like a thick Robin Hood accent, you know, Disney Robin Hood accent. and I was the only one that actually snagged the fish, but man, it was just like this huge fish with just blood getting all over the place. And it was a great experience for everyone except for the fish.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.